Introduction. Phenomenalism is an attempt to account for knowledge of the external world. It is an empiricist account which supports the idealist argument that we cannot have matter without experience, as realists believe. However, they conclude this does not lead to a materialism. They try to limit speech about physical objects and the external world and what may be logically said of them. There are two branches of the theory. The first is Mill's metaphysical phenomenalism, and the second is Eslinguistic phenomenalism. Ultimately, phenomenalism fails to prove a theory of perception may exist without reference to an independently existing material world. Paragraph 1. The phenomenalist argument is skeptical about matter similarly to idealism, and this opposes representative realism, the view that the mind represents the world as it is through the senses. The main way in which phenomenalism differs from idealism is that they think it is not necessary to argue for a materialism. It denies common sense to deny matter altogether and does not explain ordinary speech about the external world. Denial of matter oversteps the limits of philosophy metaphysically with regard to the nature of objects and the existence of God. They believe that talk of matter is just shorthand for talk about subjective sense experience. For example, if I say I see a tree, all I can actually mean is that I am seeing brown and green in a pattern which I normally call tree. Wittgenstein says meaning is use, and the phenomenalist's use of words is just to describe sense experiences. So all that tree entails are the repetitions of naming the same sense experience with the same word. Paragraph 2. If all I can talk about concerning the external world is limited to speech about my phenomenological experience, how can phenomenalists account for illusions and hallucinations? They take a coherentist approach to this problem, as we can confirm veridical experience by the correlation with different sense impressions. An illusory experience is one that does not correlate or cohere well with all of my other impressions or other people's experiences. Paragraph 3. John Stuart Mill offered one account of phenomenalism, claiming the best way of describing physical objects was as permanent possibilities of sensation. He said we should not speculate about anything that is beyond our experience, and speech about unperceived matter would entail such speculation. He illustrates his argument with the case of an orange. When we cut open an orange to discover interior qualities which were previously not accessible to the senses, we infer these inner parts existed before we could sense them. This is a psychological inference, as Hume would also say. Since we infer the interior existed through custom and habit, as each time I open one and observe the same interior, I gain a strengthened probabilistic belief that all oranges share these interior qualities. The power of expectation built up from previous sense experience leads us to infer the existence of unperceived objects as conditional certainties. I can say the inner orange exists in the sense that if I were to cut into the orange, I would experience a range of qualities, e.g., sweet or juicy. Paragraph 4. We do not speculate the inner part exists independently of my senses, but the inner orange is a permanent possibility of sensation. This enables Mill to talk of physical objects and to posit the existence of unperceived objects without having to refer to matter or to an idealist ontology. Objects are nothing more than clusters of sensations, actual and possible. Consider a fish at the bottom of the sea that we have never seen before. To speculate about its existence, all we mean is that if we're in the right place at the right time, we would be met with new empirical experiences that would be explicable in terms of clusters of sensations. Mill does not avoid all talk of physical objects existing without sensation, but he does avoid reification of inferences in metaphysics. Paragraph 5. The other main account of phenomenalism offered by A.J. Ayer is known as linguistic phenomenalism. He claims all talk about objects can be translated into talk of sense impressions without any loss of meaning. Talk of an external world existing independently of human experience is nothing more than a logical construct. This theory avoids attack on realism by skeptics. If somebody says they see a red tomato, the phenomenalist avoids being committed to the existence of matter, as all the statement is saying is that I am seeing a red, shiny circular patch. Paragraph 6. If to know means knowing something is the case, we cannot talk of knowing, since we would have to admit what is known must be independent of it. All we can say is A is aware of X, but awareness does not mean anything, as the word does not stand for anything we could sense empirically. All we can say is that X represents a series of sensations, and the sensations designated by X are indeed the case. So there is no loss of meaning if we translate statements about physical objects into statements about the incorrigibility of our experiences. Ayer insists we cannot know objects cease to exist when unperceived, so we can talk of possible sense data. Previous sense experiences give us a good inductive basis to infer that the things left in my room are still there while unperceived, so if I returned to my room I would have sensations of my things. Ayer does not suggest we talk in the language of phenomenalese, but having identified speech about matter as a logical construct, he believes he revealed nobody really believes in an independent material world, although they speak of one in everyday language. Paragraph 7. The first major objection to phenomenalism questions the cause of our sensations. They refuse to speculate about the cause of experiences, leaving an unanswered question of what is responsible for our sensation. Can it really be sufficient to essay the origin of experiences as a mystery? It also seems strange accepting no loss of meaning when translating speech about the material cause of our sensations into speech about the mere experience of our sensations. Even Ayer eventually rejected phenomenalism in favor of sophisticated realism. Paragraph 8. The next objection questions why our experiences cohere and continue. Phenomenalists accept our sense experience is coherent four ways, which enables them to avoid idealism by talking of conditional certainty of objects as possibilities of sensations. First of all, different sensations cohere simultaneously. Sight and hearing often work in conjunction, e.g., a dog barking. Second, sense experiences seem to fit together from one moment to the next, looking away from the table and back at it, and it is still there. Third, my experience is irregular, so I can predict into the future, e.g., when I walk into the garden I will see my lawn. Fourth and finally, experiences cohere with other people's. If a friend and I see the Eiffel Tower on TV, we know we are seeing the same program about Paris as we have had similar experiences. This lacks causal explanation of sensory coherence, so seems very unsatisfactory, as there appear to be correlations but no hard evidence. Paragraph 9. However, phenomenalists respond by saying the materialist is in the same position, unable to explain the coherence of our experiences. If you argue that sensations cohere because they are caused by independently existing material objects whose nature remains constant, one may ask why matter's properties remain the same? Since realists may only describe the continuity of material objects' properties and cannot provide an explanation why they remain the same, they face the same problem as the phenomenalists, unable to causally explain the continuity of sense experience. Paragraph 10. The third objection accuses the phenomenalist of leading to solipsism. If phenomenalism requires us not to speculate about the nature of things beyond my own qualia, I cannot assume others have minds. If I cannot perceive their mind, I can't infer they have one at all. So phenomenalists are obliged to concede that we can infer causal connection between other people's behavior and minds, creating an issue of why do they not posit existence of external matter. Otherwise we cannot posit the existence of other minds similarly to objects, leading to solipsism. Paragraph 11. The final objection says that it is impossible to translate speech about material objects into phenomenalism without presupposing the existence of publicly observable objects and their properties. Gilbert Ryle said we cannot describe sensations themselves without employing the vocabulary of common objects. He believed the notion of sensible objects is absurd, as they are not themselves things that can be observed. We may observe objects and these observations can be translated into speech about phenomenological content, but this applies to the act of observation, not the object being observed. When describing phenomenological experiences, we always end up reintroducing spatial relations and the concept of our own objective bodies. So sense content language is parasitic on the language of material objects. Conclusion. In conclusion, phenomenalism presents an original argument attempting to use the idealist philosophy of requiring experience for matter's existence, but avoiding a materialism. The greatest confusion created by the theory is how there can be a permanent possibility of sensation whilst removing the permanent ground for those possibilities from the realm of meaningful speech. I believe that representative realism provides a superior account answering the philosophical problem of knowledge of the external world.